Warning. Warning.
This show contains mature content. Listener discretion is advised.
Are you ready to get your mind blown?
One angry New York City Puerto Rican decided to start a radio show, determined to piss the world off by shoving a mirror in front of society's face. He kicked them in the balls.
What are you? Who are you?
This is the Crotch Shot Radio Show. Crotch Shot Radio Show.
This is not a test. This is a broadcast transmission.
We're going to stay on the air.
And now, the weepy. The weepy.
Welcome to the Crotch Shot Radio Show, where we kick the issues in the balls. We are on an active war against bullshit. We would do anything and everything to expose bullshit. The ends justify the means. Today won't be any different. Today, yet, is another thing that has a bug up my ass. Tonight, I'm joined by libertarian blogger Carl Reardon, and we'll be discussing the neocon infiltration of the Patriot movement. The reason why I want to talk about this is, if you see the title of the episode, Islamophobia Problem in the Patriot Movement. As a lot of you know, I am a 9/11 conspiracy theorist. I do not believe that we were attacked by Muslim extremists. I don't believe in hating people based on their religion. I'm not afraid of Muslims. That's it. I'm not an Islamophobic. I just simply do not believe in extremist Muslims. I believe that ISIS and Al Qaeda before it were just tools of the CIA to continue a war in the Middle East. But without further ado, I would like to introduce Senor Kyle Reardon. How you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing pretty well, Louis. Laissez-faire. Been a long time listener, first time guest, so I'm pretty excited.
I think you've called in before. I mean,
or maybe I did once before, perhaps. Yeah. It's been a while.
So you are an anti-political libertarian blogger.
Yep.
What's your blog? Go ahead.
Oh, it's located, courtesy of FPRN, it's located at The Last Bastille. Bastille is spelled Bastille. TheLastBastille.com. I try to focus on various topics, dealing with legal matters, economic matters, even dealing with self-defense issues and such, use of force issues. And the reason, I guess, why I would be labeled anti-political is because I do not believe in working inside the system, in reformism, in begging those who falsely imagine themselves to be our rulers for special favors or anything else. I think that if we're going to be advocates of liberty, we have to take direct action and implement it in our own lives without asking permission from the state. So that's kind of the short version. So whenever I do anything, like I tell people, hey, guess what? You can cancel your voter registration because the government laws say that you can. Many of them do. And when I also mention things like the Freedom Umbrella, which is a list of all of the direct action methods, and there's over 90 of them that is currently available. Actually, the Freedom Umbrella is actually on another website called Liberty Under Attack, libertyunderattack.com.
Yes, I've had, God, I forgot his name already.
Oh, you mean Shane?
Yes, I've had young Shane on the show.
Yeah.
I should try to get him on. That would be fantastic.
Well, you know, he just published the second edition of the Freedom Umbrella, and there's like over 90 different options for direct action and so forth. So, so there's a lot of, there's some things I'm involved in ideas and concepts and methods, techniques for actually securing our liberty that I've been involved in. And for your listeners, one thing that I would like to point out is I was part of the larger effort to put what I think, hopefully, is the final nail in the coffin of Luke Radowski's embezzlement nonsense from years ago that I know that you've been very much on the forefront of as well. So I kind of had my toe in a lot of different things. I'll just put that in short.
So what is that? Why bring that up in this case?
Well, it's rather interesting because Luke Radowski was very much involved in the Patriot Movement, I think is fair to say. The idea of returning to limited government, the idea of restoring the Republic, of upholding the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights and so forth. So I guess that's the loose connection, I guess to some degree. But the only reasoning I'm mentioning it now is just for your listeners in terms of my background and all that. So, you know, you and I have known each other for at least couple years now, at the very least. So
about 30. I
just try to kind of help behind the scenes as much as I can. But every once in a while, I'll pop my head up and, you know, get on the radio and broadcast with good folks like you and Shane and some other people and, you know, speak truth to power. So that's pretty much what we're doing here tonight.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it just seems like I always find myself in situations where I know, okay, I'm going against the grain. It's like, yeah, this makes sense. This is like when it came to the Luke thing. I made myself damn near pariah in the 9/11 Truth Movement until it became cool to question Alex Jones and get mad at Alex Jones. And then it's like, oh yeah, Luke is scum. I knew that all the time. Fuck Louis. Like, okay. So now this is just another thing. Is like, okay, you idiots. You know, first it's like, okay, yeah, 9/11 is an inside job, criminal elements within our government. It's like, oh, yeah, Muslims. Muslims are a threat. Muslims are, they're using Muslims to destabilize. Like, shut the fuck up, Alex. Kyle?
I'm sorry, I'm here. Yeah, it's kind of, reminds me a bit of that, like, Mark Twain quote about about what the Patriot is.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like that, you know. It's just kind of a bunch of these Johnny come latelys, and it's like, well, geez, guys, if you had these serious moral qualms beforehand, why didn't you speak up earlier? Like, I mean, if you seriously thought that there was stuff going on, why not earlier?
Yeah.
And you know, perhaps regarding the issue we're going to discuss tonight, maybe I should have spoken up earlier. And I'll be frank, ladies and gentlemen, I've got a lot to lose.
I thought you're Kyle.
I'm sorry?
I thought you were Kyle. Who's Frank? That old joke.
I totally missed it. Thanks for pointing that out. But yeah, you know, I've got a lot to lose. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of my associates are minarchists. They believe in the concept of limited government and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's only up until recently I've been associating with more purely libertarian folks who are kind of pushing more towards the no government position. So, but I still keep in contact with folks who still want limited government to some degree. And unfortunately, many of them, they're not so much promoting limited government anymore. They're not so much promoting restoring the Republic or rescuing the Constitution or anything like that. They're pretty much a lot of our conversations now, private conversations, are revolving around the Muslim question. So it was pretty much an issue of, well, how am I going to deal with this? And, you know, hell, my most recent article doesn't even have anything to do with this. It was an article about Social Security. So I'm working on other things. I'm plodding along and getting my work done as a blogger. And unfortunately, whenever I, you know, have private conversations with people and I'm taking a break between articles or you know, during the research phase for an article and the actual writing phase, I have to hear about this shit regarding, you know, the Muslim question and so forth. So it was kind of a ticking time bomb, Louis. in terms of having to address it. And you know what? I might get ostracized because of what I'm about to say tonight. So yeah. I just want to make that perfectly clear right from the outset. That is a risk I'm taking. And, you know,
is
I'm
it really
willing to do it.
I mean, look, you know, not to downplay what you're trying to do. It's, but with people that don't matter, like usually, like people, these people, do they clothe you? Do they feed you? Do they give you money to pay your bills?
Maybe not exactly to that degree, but they have helped me with writing articles on various things, with getting government documents, with all sorts of things. So no, to that degree, no, they're not like family in that sense, but they are, I guess you could say, ranging from acquaintances to even close friends.
Yeah.
So
and if they're really good people, they would understand. Maybe they might be in the wrong and that you're just trying to bring them back.
Well, what I'm interested in at this point is, can we even have a dialogue about the issue where we can present both sides, not just, you know, the John Ritzheimer version of it. And don't worry, I'll get to him and his shenanigans, because he's one hell of a character. I'll say that much, with his fuck Islam T-shirts. Right. I'll get to that in a bit. But what I'm interested in, just from the outset, just the audience understands where I'm coming from, I want both sides of the issue. Hell, I would love nothing more than a moderated debate with rules where each side can, you know, we can discuss it and so forth. But obviously that's not what we're doing tonight. We are presenting, unfortunately, just one side of the issue, the other side of the issue that is taking more of a critical eye to this recent, what's really a fad, whether it's pushed by really these neoconservatives like Pamela Geller, Bridget Gabrielle, even Anne Barnhart from years ago. And then you have other folks like John Ritzheimer taking up the banner and doing things like putting a bullet round through copies of the Quran. That's where it's gone. And so I think, well, let's take a history lesson and kind of go back a little bit and really see, is this kind of rhetoric, is it even true, I think would be one thing to answer, but is it even justified and so forth? Now, truth be told, Louis, you know, I remember, and I think you probably remember this too, I remember when the Patriot Movement used to be cool, like during the Clinton and Bush Jr. years, so like the 1990s throughout the 2000s, I think would pretty much be safe to say. So pre-Obama, if you will. You know, I remember guys like Alex Jones, 2004 Republican National Convention. I think that year it was in New York City.
Yeah, it was.
When the police state guys rolled out.
Yeah.
You know, and Pier, I think it was Pier 57, I think it was turned into a temporary concentration
camp. It was, in fact. They were, I remember they're still, I think they're still settling out of court with some of those people that were locked up because that had asbestos.
Yeah, there was a lot of health problems with that, wasn't there?
Yeah. I mean, there were people that got... Well, no, that was a separate issue. Forget it. I was talking about people... but that was critical mass. Was critical mass... was that critical mass? Hold on. I gotta... Keep talking.
No, well, remember, critical mass, those are the guys riding on bicycles. But that's something a little bit different. But, you know, I remember when the Patriot Movement used to be cool. You know, I remember a lot of the guys who were doing a lot of the militia training exercises and such. I remember the Hatari. I remember a lot of very different people.
It was during the Republican National Convention back in August 27, 2004. During the RNC here in New York City, they mass arrested a lot of the critical mass bicyclists, even took away their bikes, and a lot of those people had settled out of court because their property was stolen.
I'm not surprised by that. I mean, there was a lot of police state actions during that particular RNC and so forth. But, you know, I remember the Patriot Movement. I remember guys like Michael Bednarik, you know, screaming bloody murder about the government, disregarding the Constitution, the federal one anyway, 1787. You know, I remember a lot of the leftists, for lack of a better term, progressive socialists and so forth. I remember a lot of them being anti-war, which they're not so much anymore, of course, because Obama in the White House, right? Their guy got in, as it were, as they would view it in terms of the left-right paradigm. See, I remember all of that. I think you remember that, a lot of that too. So 1990s, 2000s was a very different time period. in terms of people who were, yes, they were nationalistic. Mm-hmm. That's true. That's never changed. And that is part of what we're discussing tonight. So, yes, they were nationalistic, but at least they gave a damn about liberty, at least to some degree. And at least they were using the Bill of Rights, the Federal Bill of Rights, as a template for what should be an idea of our freedoms, free speech, religious liberty. We'll get to that tonight as well. Religious liberty, keeping and bearing arms, a lot of things related to privacy and many other things. I remember a lot of that. And, you know, something else I think deserves mentioning. I know you kind of mentioned a little bit ago that you're a truther and still are. You know, I've known a lot of, you know, guys like yourself and others who kind of hold to that position about 9/11 being a false flag or inside job. Mm-hmm. Now, me personally, I just respectfully disagree about that issue. I'm more of like the Ron Paul, more blowback type thing. So you and I would be similar in the sense of because of the federal government's actions, and especially the unconstitutional wars abroad and all that. That's why you have these suspiciously violent events and so forth. So that is pretty much the common ground. But I don't even think what we're discussing tonight regarding the neocon infiltration of the Patriot Movement, I don't even think it really has anything to do with 9/11 so much. I mean, I guess you could go on that angle if you really want to, but I just don't personally see it. I mean, I remember back in 2002. Do you remember 2002? Right after 9/11, but before Iraq and got invaded?
Maybe.
Basically the Patriot Act was still pretty brand new for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, I remember, and this was back when I'll admit it tonight, I used to be a news junkie. Thankfully, I'm not so much anymore. Mm-hmm. I actually try to stick to, like, books and things. But, you know, back when I was a news junkie in 2002, I remember reading a ton of reports back then over the news wires like Reuters and AP and such that the screeners, that TSA, remember TSA, Transportation Security Administration? They were brand new, too, because had just started the year before.
Yeah, I actually remember trying to get a job with TSA, and I was told that I had too much education. And at the time, I just had a high school diploma.
God, I could believe that. But I remember reading reports of TSA unjustly profiling Americans who were of Arabic ancestry as if they were terrorists, because people were still afraid about the so-called Islamic terrorism, the so-called war on terror, which in subsequent years has proven to be a hoax, as I'm sure your listeners are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember all of that. Now, there's another detail a lot of people don't really remember, which I do, and I even mentioned in one of my articles. I think I gave you a link to it earlier. I remember that anyone who was of Arabic ancestry who is not a Muslim, people who were just secular.
Oh.
I remember all sorts of other people from the Middle East, not Muslims, people who were Hindus. My personal favorite were the Coptic Christians getting harassed by TSA circa 2002 and treated as if they were Islamic terrorists. And thankfully, a lot of that has died down in the subsequent decade and change, although it still happens every now and again. So I'm not saying it doesn't happen. But, you know, they've had to be a little bit more careful because people at the time back then raised a hue and a cry. And rightfully so. It was unjust profiling of people because of their ancestry.
Actually, if I could make a little comment about that, there was this there's this show called Adam Ruins Everything. And he did this thing about security. And they made the point that the TSA has never stopped a terrorist.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, I would argue because there's no such thing. You know, you can't stop the government. If the government wants to blow something up, they're going to blow something up. And, you know, they'll just tell the TSA agents to stand down. But, you know, but all this, all the body scanning, all the x-ray machines, x-raying your bags, it's all something called security theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, and you know, as someone that does security, checking in people at a front desk, taking their ID, is not going to stop a mass shooter.
No kidding.
It's not. I mean, it's good. It makes it look like you're securing something, but you really isn't. The best way to secure something is with a locked door.
Well, that's definitely one way of doing it in terms of barricades and such.
Yeah.
But in terms of the history that I think a lot of the Patriots have forgotten, which is something that I would like to mention tonight as well, is if you go back to like the 1980s, you know, a lot of people have forgotten about Operation Cyclone and the Mujahideen. You know, the federal government during the Cold War, as a way of waging proxy wars against the Soviet Union. Remember the Soviet Union, what the Russians used to be called when they were officially communists?
Mm-hmm.
As
opposed to being unofficially communist?
Basically, yes, because remember the Chinese they're still officially communist, even though they're technically fascist, but that's a whole other discussion for another time.
Yeah.
In terms of geopolitics, the Mujahideen were equipped, financed, and trained by the CIA.
Yes.
That was the whole point of Operation Cyclone. Okay, so the federal government has a history of equipping, training, and funding, you know, freedom fighters in Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
basically to push back the Soviets. And then, of course, once the Soviets leave, you know, the Mujahideen split in 20,000 different directions. Some of them formed the Taliban. Some of them just went off and just did other things. Some of them went back to their homes, kind of like in the tradition of Cincinnatus. You know, you go wage the war, you win your freedom, and then you go back to your farms and you live your life. You have a family and so mm-hmm. forth, which is kind of like what normal people do, or a lot of normal people, or they go travel the world, or they get on with the business of life, as Thomas Jefferson would put it. But then funny thing happens, you know, a couple decades later, you know, basically you fast forward about 2001 or so, next thing you know, the federal government's, you know, invading Afghanistan because of 9/11.
Mm.
Well, isn't that rather interesting?
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of, you know, so who, you know, those who were the friends of the federal government are now the enemies. Wow, that's rather interesting. I wonder what led to that. So once you have Operation Cyclone and the Mujahideen, you fast forward a couple decades later, And especially following the invasion of Iraq in 2003, you have all of these insurgencies. I'm sure you remember this rhetoric from last decade or so, where it's the Iraqi insurgency, and then there's all these other insurgents coming from other countries in the Arabic world, the Middle East.
Yeah.
Whereas
the big joke, whereas the joke was, you mean people trying to get your asses out of their own country.
yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of silly.
Like,
and then eventually they were called.
Yeah, it's like that old joke. It's like, you know, if the Chinese were to invade us, we would be considered,
insurgents, right?
Yeah, it's like,
well, remember, there was the one Ron Paul ad that was where the press release or whatever it was, where he was suggesting that, you know, what if Texas got invaded? And I am a Texan, so I can relate to it. You know, if Texas got invaded by the Chi-Coms, wouldn't the Texans, who would be using their ARs and AKs and whatever else to fend off the Chinese invaders, wouldn't they be called insurgents by the Chinese communists? I assume they would be.
And honestly, well, I mean, not to poke holes in that whole theory, how the fuck would the Chinese be able to safely land on Texas?
Good luck. I can't figure it out.
I mean, I guess, like, somebody will call them, like, look, stupid, this is how you do it. You go through Mexico. Like, wouldn't the Mexicans have something to say about, you know, Chinese marching through their land?
Unless they got bought and paid off for. But again, that's a hypothetical. What actually happened in real world, of course, is what happened in Iraq. And so because of Al-Qaeda allegedly doing 9/11, which is kind of like, yeah, and best case scenario, it was blowback. So the federal government's still not innocent anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Al-Qaeda. And then with the insurgencies, you then have Al-Qaeda in Iraq, so-called, which is somehow mystically different from the other Al-Qaeda, inexplicably so. And then basically you fast forward to roughly about 3 or so years ago, basically 2011. And then you have the so-called Al-Qaeda in Syria. And then not too long ago, maybe last year, you have freaking ISIS. Now, what's interesting is that ISIS is the Al-Qaeda in Syria. Again, it's basically like the same type. You know, like how in a martial arts discipline you can trace the lineage from like sensei to apprentice.
Yeah.
And you can trace it. Exact same thing. You go from the Mujahideen to Al-Qaeda in Iraq to Al-Qaeda in Syria to the so-called moderate Syrian rebels who are not so moderate, of course, as those in the American intelligence community know. And then, of course, that leads to ISIS or ISIL or whatever their acronym happens to be this week. The guy's doing the beheadings, basically. And what's rather interesting is, remember Hillary Clinton and Benghazi scandal with the emails and so forth? Well, the reason that all of that is important is because that is the hardcore proof that the federal government was once again doing what? Equipping, funding, and training ISIS.
Yeah. So what do you think of that movie coming out, 13 Hours?
Oh, dude, man, I don't watch that kind of stuff anymore. I just, there's no sense in doing it. Too busy doing research.
In fact, hold on, let me see if I could play the trailer. 13 Hours in Benghazi. I went to the movies to see the last Hunger Games. Don't ask me why. they played the trailer to this, and I was like, well, I guess that's how that's why Hillary's not getting elected.
Yeah, they wouldn't want her to be President Snow, right?
Yeah. Like, that's why she's not getting elected. That's why her ass and people got pissed. So here, let me play this. This is 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi official trailer. In 2012, the threat level in Benghazi, Libya, was deemed critical.
Libyan visa. Official.
Pull over for inspection.
Sorry, sir, I can't do that.
Pull over for inspection!
How willing are you to die for your country? I'm ready to go right here, right now.
Everybody, this is Jack Silva.
Jack.
We trained SEALs at Coronado, so he knows the drill.
Welcome to Club Med.
People running around with guns.
We need immediate assistance. We are overrun.
States under attack. Let's go, man.
Soon, we are all gonna die.
You have a U.S. ambassador at risk.
The ambassador is in his safe haven. You're not the first responders. You're the last resort. You will wait.
None of you have to go. But we are the only help they have.
From director Michael Bay, because of course, you if you're going to make Hillary look bad, you need to have more explosions than actually happened. When everything went wrong...
Never came.
Six men had the courage...
You're not taking orders anymore. You're in my world now.
...to do what was right.
Six American lives to save.
This is a true story. All right. I think I made a mistake in playing that because that's really not radio friendly.
Well, I will say this. That trailer kind of reminded me of Zero Dark Thirty a little bit. You know, this is the problem is that the military industrial complex has to use the power of Hollywood to push their narratives. And so I'm not surprised at all that, you know, that they'll basically try to dramatize whatever and whatnot. But as far as like real life goes, the only reason I brought up Benghazi was to basically show that the reason Hillary Clinton is trying, and remember the last or the second to last so-called Democratic presidential debate when Bernie Sanders was said about we're tired of hearing about Hillary Clinton's emails. We don't want to hear about it anymore. Mm. It's like, sorry, Bernie, Mr. Democratic Socialist, as he calls himself. Mm-hmm. There's actual like violations of federal law here. Like there's criminal culpability here. Besides, of course, the foreign policy implications of it and so forth. So this isn't anything to like shovel under the rug. Although Hillary does have a history, of doing that, which would be an episode all by itself.
Well, I mean, look, if I could say there is one positive note, if Hillary became president and we were in a war, I mean, there wouldn't be a quagmire under her because all the soldiers would have been killed.
Yeah, she would send them to the slaughter because she's a war hawk, right? I mean, she's very much in line with the neocon agenda that we're talking about here tonight. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to get at here is that, you know, a lot of the constitutionalists during the 90s and even the 2000s, they used to be anti-war, but not so much now. Mm-hmm. And I have stuck to my guns about being anti-war, anti-government war anywhere, because they're pretty much all unconstitutional. I mean, can you even list how many wars the federal government's involved in now? Hell, I try to stay on top of it, and even I can't do it. That's how bad it is. You know, the current El Presidente got the Nobel Peace Prize, and yet he's drone bombing. You know, he did the no-fly zone over Libya back when Gaddafi was still around right before he got executed, if you remember that. So, I mean, it's just, the military-industrial complex has been very, very busy under Obama's White House, to say the least. But unfortunately, a lot of the American patriots have completely flipped, which is what we're primarily talking about tonight. And something worth mentioning, at least in passing now, but I do want to get to it a little bit later, is that I've said before that the infighting amongst patriots, constitutionalists, libertarians, and so forth, the infighting, I've said, has been the biggest problem for years. And there have been attempts to bring, for lack of a better term, there have been attempts to bring patriot unity so that people would stop bickering so that we can, you know, get on with the business of, you know, restoring liberty and so forth. But unfortunately, it seems to have been a curse in disguise. And I will get to that in a little bit here, why I say that. But I will say this, with the Muslim issue, mm-hmm. the Muslim question, I will say this, I have never seen the infighting so low. And there is a reason for that, which I'll get to.
Oh, okay. What do you think is the cause of now all this Islamophobia within the patriot movement?
I think the federal government has noticed that people are getting pretty much fed up with their illegitimate bullcrap. And I think they're noticing that the growth, especially of people who are self-identifying as anarcho-capitalist or versions on a theme thereof, anarchist even just more generally, I think they're noticing that. There is an uptick of that. I think it is measurable. I just haven't written an article about it yet.
Yeah.
And because of that, and by the way, most of those numbers are from people who used to believe in limited government. Mm-hmm. I think the federal government's noticing this, and they're trying to sabotage it as much as they can because they know libertarians in general, whether for limited government or no government, they know libertarians are staunchly anti-war, much like I am. And they know that if they can push the nationalism button, they can balkanize the patriots against libertarians. And that's what I honestly think is happening here. And, you know, I would like to get into, I think, how that happened. But I think that's kind of the end goal here, is to prevent a unified resistance of sorts against the federal government specifically. And so now instead they try to galvanize the patriot movement against libertarians, against other people, so that the patriots basically come off as a bunch of, for lack of a better term, as a bunch of nationalistic xenophobes. And it's also a discrediting mechanism, because the patriot movement didn't used to be like that, like I said, during the 90s and 2000s.
I got Mildred in the chat room. He's like, how many shorthand terms for not war do we have now?
That's a good point.
And also, I have a gentleman that he wants to call in. His name was C.W. Paul McBride. You want to take calls?
Sure, I'm open to that.
All right, so let me get him on. Let me, we got Paul. He actually, he made the comment, it's not Islamophobia if they're trying to kill you.
I'm here.
Ah, we got Paul. Paul, what do you want to say?
Well, I was just going to echo with what your guest said. I had a couple questions for your guest, because I've been listening for about the last 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I to preference it for your call, your listeners, you know this, I am Eastern Orthodox, so Russian Orthodox. So I follow a lot of what goes on in Russia, Ukraine, Syria, Libya. It just surprises me, sir, that the neocons, we have to get rid of Bashar Assad. Well, what happens when Bashar Assad goes? Well, I don't know. We got to get rid of Bashar Assad. You know, if you watch all the establishment Republicans right now, Marco Rubio, one of them, he is just screaming to high heaven, you know, we got to get rid of Bashar Assad. Well, then ISIS takes over and takes over the Middle East and destroys Israel, which is the neocons, you know, sacred cow. So, you know, and Russia's a bad guy because they bombed. But I personally believe that the industrial military complex wants to bring down Russia. So therefore, the American government has nobody to say no to them. That's what this whole issue is over there right now. That's why they want to do Libya and Syria and all that. Nobody's talking about the fact that we started Libya. ISIS is there because of America. Nobody's talking about the fact that we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq when the terrorist, 9/11, or whatever you want to believe there, was from Saudi Arabia. But no, we let them go home. We let their boy, like Trump said, we let their wives and girlfriends and all that go home. You know, like I said, my thing is with the whole Islamophobia, Saudi Arabia is trying to destroy the world. End of story. The main enemy here is the Saudis. And so I was just going to ask you, your caller, and then I'll hang up and listen. I was just going to ask your caller what his thoughts are on the Russian government, you know, the neocons' constant obsession and fetish with Vladimir Putin and the Russian government and how that plays in with their narrative. And I'll hang up now.
All righty. Kyle?
Yeah, sure. I'm no fan of the Russian government. Putin can go, you know, stick it where the sun doesn't shine. I'm not a fan of the Russians. I'm not a fan of the Chinese. I'm also not a fan of the Israelis, and I'm certainly no fan of the Saudi Arabians.
So I mean, okay. Let me before you continue other points. Why don't you feel that Putin isn't a hero like almost a lot of these patriots are painting him out to be?
Because of what happened with the Ukrainians. The Ukrainians, if they want to secede and have their own country, they should be able to do so. But that's not what happened, is it?
No.
Here's the problem. You know, as a libertarian, I really have a problem with the entire concept of authority. So people who falsely proclaim themselves to be your rulers, my rulers, the rulers of the guy down the street, even the rulers of the guy fellow who just called in a moment ago, I kind of have a problem with that conceptually just at all. So whether you were talking about the those who imagine themselves the rulers of the United States, the rulers of Europe in general, the European Union, right? It's a super state. The rulers of Russia, the rulers of China, the rulers of Saudi Arabia, the rulers of friggin' South Africa or any other place on the planet for that matter, except perhaps Antarctica, because I don't think there's a sovereign nation state there, at least not yet, unless they terraform it, right? You know, I really don't like the concept of people basically claiming that I have to obey their laws because they said so, this monopoly statutory law thing, which of course is a discussion for another time. So I hope that answers your caller's question. I don't side with foreign rulers because mainly I have a problem with the domestic rulers as it is, and I don't want to compound the situation. I don't agree with basically the emergence of what is really kind of neo-feudal Russia. So look, if the Ukrainians want to go off and they don't want to be part of the Russian Federation or whatever the hell they call themselves this week, they should be free to do so. So I hope that answers his question. Mm-hmm.
So, do you believe that Putin is fighting against the New World Order?
Whether he is or not, I don't particularly care. If he is, then, you know, whatever. I mean, the allies of today could be the enemies of tomorrow. But the problem is that he still imagines himself to be the ruler of Russia, and that I have a problem with. The Russian people should be free to exercise their natural liberty without asking permission from the government, which, by the way, is pretty much my same way of viewing the United States federal government here too. So, you know, is Putin a hero? According to what standard? You know, does the Russian government still tax its people? Does it still expect their people to follow all sorts of to obey the dictates of people who would try to say that vices are crimes? Look how they treat homosexuals, for Christ's sakes. I mean, this isn't, like, hard to figure out. So, no, I don't support Putin. I don't support any of these self-imagined rulers, and especially not the ones on the North American continent. I hope that answers your caller's question.
There you go. So, all right, so let's get back on topic here. So, the background here, the Patriot Movement used to be cool under Clinton and Bush. Yes, you were talking about the 9/11 false flag inside job versus blowback.
Yeah, I think the last thing I mentioned was the infighting. So just to mention that briefly, just one more time before because we need to get to like the meat and potatoes here.
Yeah.
The infighting has really gone down. But the reason I say it's a curse in disguise is because of what caused the recent Patriot unity that's been sought after all these years. And it has to deal directly with what we're about to get into. So there's a lot of different ways you could describe what these anti-Muslim diatribes, for lack of a better term, really kind of involve. And I guess the most neutral way of trying to describe it would really be kind of the Muslim question. So kind of like during World War II, the Nazis would phrase it as like the Jewish question. Or Murray Rothbard, speaking of libertarians, he would say like the question of the state, whether to have a government at all or not. So, because, of course, when he did it, that was more tongue-in-cheek. But regarding with tonight's subject, I guess you could call it the Muslim question. And the Muslim question is simply this. Are Muslims a threat to American liberty? How do you answer that question is rather important.
Yeah. I mean, why?
Well, that's the I guess that's the question that has been proffered by a lot of these folks going on their anti-Islamic diatribes, because the way they answer that question for them, they answer the question by saying, yes, Muslims are a threat to American liberty. And then there are those of us who say, no, Muslims are not a threat to American liberty. So the question that all of this is pivoting on is, are Muslims a threat to American liberty? I think that's the most concise way of trying to show both sides of it. And obviously, I'll be presenting the one side of it, obviously, that no, Muslims are not a threat to American liberty. But I do think it's important to look at what the neo-concept
is saying.
Well, I mean,
like, look, I haven't looked in much into this. But my common sense says, you know, Habib that sells me my halal in the cart of the block from me is no threat to me.
Well, sure. I mean, if you're going by like common sense or whatever else, sure.
It's
but
remember, like, I'm like, okay, at the Muslim family that lives three doors down from me that walks around in a hijab is not a fucking threat. Like, just because you're a Muslim doesn't mean it doesn't mean jack shit.
Well, according to the Patriots now, it does.
It makes no damn sense. It's like then
to them, it does make sense. Very much so.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
well, then
they keep. Sorry.
Yeah, well, they're fucking idiots. Like, this is my common. This is my common sense. It's like, I don't see them as a threat. And honestly, it's kind of hard to see anybody as a threat until they're a threat. But if they're not making any noise, any saying, oh, that door of Medicaid and shit like that, like, for me to be like, oh my god, you know, they're praying to Mecca or some shit, like, who gives a flying fuck?
Well, sure, like, and like, for example, you know, if a Muslim does raise his scimitar and is trying to slice you or something, like, then it's kind of obvious, right? It becomes an issue of self-defense at that point. But we're not talking about that tonight. We're not talking about, like, individual criminals.
Yeah.
The issue here is unfortunately, it is a collective one, which, you know, in terms of collective trends, it kind of gets difficult, at least to some degree. But how you answer that question, are Muslims a threat to American liberty, is very, very important. Now you were mentioning about how it makes no goddamn sense and all that.
Yeah, but if you start asking that, then you could say, okay, so if just because they happen to worship, okay, so are Mormons a threat to national security are fucking Scientologists are. Yeah, sorry. Scientologists is the one religion that is a threat to national security. So I'm just going to throw this out there. Fuck you, not Gene Roddenberry. What's his name? Something. What the I forgot.
Oh, wait, you mean Tom Cruise, the other celebrity?
No. The one that founded Scientology.
Oh, L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard. There you go. Fuck you. Well, he's dead, so he doesn't exist anymore. Anyways, Mildred's like, I wonder if some of those patriots want a mythical enemy like ages past. People fear uncertainty.
Well, I think that is well-founded. I will say this. Mm-hmm. Having the patriots basically kind of talk to me in private conversations and go at length about things, I've had to hear it kind of, you know, and all that. Otherwise I, you know, don't stay in contact with them. And, you know, I do want to stay in contact with many of them because they do useful things for me and are useful for other reasons and so forth. But I've had to get an education of sorts, or maybe would it be disinformation? I don't know. But I think it's worth mentioning. So there's a couple different things here that I think need to be considered when mm-hmm. we're trying to evaluate how do you even begin answering that question. So let's look at the one side of it. So there have been different people writing articles regarding the Muslim question. Let's see. Gary Hunt wrote an article last – not this past October, but October before last in 2014 – where it was – I'm trying to pull it up. Hold on a second. It was a conference held by Sunni Muslims in Scandinavia in May of 2013 is what he's reporting on. And it was the issue of one of the speakers. Name was Faha'ullah Qushairi. And basically the idea of the transcript basically kind of was that, you know, that the people in attendance at the conference were normal Sunni Muslims. Qushairi basically asked, how many of you agree that men and women should sit separately? Please raise your hands. And like everyone in the room raises their hands except a few people. He went on to say, how many of you believe in stoning for adultery and other things? And like most people raised their hands and so forth. Now, keep in mind, this is something that took place in Scandinavia. Now, I ask you, why would the American patriots, American patriots, remember they're supposed to be nationalistic. Why would American patriots give one twit about something happening in Scandinavia? I'm just saying, you know, if the question is dealing with Muslims being a threat to American liberty, why do Muslims on the other side of the pond have to do with anything?
Yeah.
So that is another aspect that needs to be dealt with here. Is what is the scope of evidence? That's another question. What is the scope of evidence in determining how you go about answering the Muslim question? Are we looking at Muslims globally? Are we looking at Muslims in the industrialized Western nations like the UK, US, Australia, and so forth?
But
are we only looking at the Muslims in America? What's the scope here?
But also, what makes them a threat? Is it simply the fact that they worship Allah? Like what makes a person a threat? Like under what are the parameters?
Well, remember there are violently suspicious events that occur, but then for some reason, whether for good or bad reasons, they are attributed to Muslims. So, for example, if you remember the shootings in Garland, actually it was right here in Texas in Garland, Pamela Geller's free speech drawing Muhammad contest event thing. And I'll get to her in a bit, you know, there was the shooting. And as a response to that, John Ritzheimer became very big in the Patriot movement because of the protest he led at that mosque in Arizona, which is like, well, wait a minute, I thought the shooting happened in Texas. Well, yes, it did, but supposedly they were members of some sort of mosque in Arizona. You see the problem. So, like, unless he's saying that they went and traveled or something, I'm not sure if that's part of the narrative that Ritzheimer is saying, because he's kind of and his narrative seems kind of disjointed, cherry-picked, and heavy-handed at times. But that's something to kind of consider. You know, this is the same guy who wears the "fuck Islam" shirt. Okay, John Ritzheimer, former U.S. Marine, he was even on the Pete Santilli show not 2 months ago. Remember Pete Santilli, Mr. I Want to Restore the Republic, Limited Government, U.S. Constitution, yeah. Oath Keepers, and all of that? Well, he had Ritzheimer on, Mr. Fuck Islam. So, like, what's Pete Santilli's deal? I mean, Pete Santilli didn't take him to task about any of this. He was saying, yeah, the Muslims are a threat, more or less. So, I mean, people can come to their own conclusions about Mr. Santilli for other reasons, but I will say is that Pete Santilli did not challenge Ritzheimer on – you just took it for granted that the Muslims were a threat. So where did these how did this come about with just taking it for granted that Muslims in America are like bad people, just period? Where did this come from?
I mean, if I can make the point, when the supposed ISIS leader Ayad il Baghdadi, he's a Baghdadi. So, anyways, I just remember when you were talking about this, because I mean, the question is. Just like, let's say, okay, that shooting that happened, it was done by a Muslim member of this specific mosque. But does that mean they will? What if all of them weren't in on it? It was just this one nutcase, and it wasn't because he was Muslim.